Okay, here we are in June 2nd, starting in the Sealed Book of Moses, chapter 7, and Baki is going to lead our discussion today.
Thank you, Russell. Yes, chapter 7. It's, chapter 7, 8, and 9, I believe, are diving more into the psyche of Nimrod and his ways. So it's really interesting to study that. So let's start. Let me see. Aaron. Hey, Aaron. Are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Could you read the first verse?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, chapter 7. Nimrod elects himself the promised descendant. Babel is built, builds cities, creates schools of wisdom for the purpose of nullifying the gift of God in children. Verse 1. After the flood, all the land was still of the same language and dialect, and parents had the custom to teach their children about the good feeling from the Spirit of God in such a way that such teaching became natural after the flood among the descendants of Noah, as God had designed. Shall I keep reading?
Well, I was thinking about the good feelings from the Spirit of God. Maybe think about that for a moment, because in the sealed book, in Moses chapter 4, verse 17, there are some things named, but I'm not sure if these, are the good feelings coming from the Spirit of God. And also in the Bible are some feelings about that. So I was wondering, maybe we could have a look at that. The sealed book of Moses, chapter 4, verse 17. And these are, I can read them. The feelings of charity, enthusiasm, peace of spirit, resignation to withstand adversities, benignity, compassion, faith, tenderness, and self-control. So that's an awesome foundation to build a society upon, I think. What do you think?
Wow. It's amazing.
Yes. Oh, thanks. John,
hey,
what would
so
you think?
I was just thinking, what would that look like? If we were just peeking through a hole in the fence, what would that look like? Parents healing, giving blessings, probably being all of one common good. In other words, sharing and having things common among them. And how that would play out in everyday creating, supporting, and manifesting good feelings. It wouldn't be a competitive environment. It wouldn't be driven by the fears of gain or loss. It wouldn't be built on what you have versus somebody else. And I think, Bucky, you're right. It, you know, first, if I have a good look at what was, then it makes what Nimrod did a lot more analytical, obvious, and recognizable in our daily environment, because it's here and it's in a lot of, well, it's in all things. But that's a good point to make before we start, I think.
Thanks, John. Also in the Bible, there are some, they're called fruits of the Spirit. So these I also want to mention. And they are, here it says, to and to knowledge, self-control. Oh, yeah, this is a great... And to knowledge, self-control, and to self-control, perseverance, and to perseverance, godliness, and to godliness, mutual affection, and to mutual affection, love. So that's also Great. Oh, there was one part missing, verse 5, the beginning. For this very reason, make every effort to add to your faith goodness, and to goodness, knowledge. And then to knowledge, self-control, perseverance, godliness, mutual affection, and love. So that's also great to have among a new society, I guess, which you were talking about, John. If we peek through through a hole, if we, what we would love to see. So yes, I thought it was good to point that out, and how it becomes different. So verse 2, maybe Russell, can you read?
It was messed up here. I had to reshuffle my displays and get things in order, but I'm back.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. But it came to pass that one of the descendants of Ham, under the influence of Satan, sought in his heart to have full control over the children of men, entering into the towns and villages, killing men and taking captive children and women, and enslaving all those who did not agree with his command.
What do you think, Russell?
Well, I think that's
sounds familiar.
It kind of does. A new way to control people. If they don't like what I'm saying, then we'll just force them.
That's true.
Sounds pretty familiar.
It's happening. It's happening all right now. What you control through maybe internet or social media. I just saw an Israeli woman. No, a Palestine woman in Israeli territory, and she had said something on social media about the situation, and she was taken out of her house and blindfolded. And so that's what's happening. But it's also happening that people are getting dragged out of their house, like in Ukraine, to go to war, for example.
Well, even in the United States, they drag people out of their houses over January 6th. It's craziness.
Oh, yeah. So lots of recognizable things that are going on right now. And maybe verse 3 also, Russell, could you also read that?
Yes. To those who were subject to this his power, these were commissioned to act in their many duties, whether in the planting and harvesting of fruits and cereals, in the management of cattle and animals of slaughter, in the creation of bricks and construction of houses and protective walls, in the production of weapons and ornaments of war, and the most robust and active were commissioned to be in the military service because they settled in a valley in the land of Shinar.
Yes, it's really interesting because, I looked a bit to Shinar of Sinear, as we say. And then in the book of Genesis, chapter 10, verse 10, there is some information about Nimrod. So I thought maybe you could have a look at that. I don't know if somebody has a Bible. You must have a Bible.
It looks like it's Genesis 10:10.
Yes, 10:10. Yeah.
And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, and Erech, and Akkad, and Calneh, in the land of Shinar.
There you go, this Shinar. And also in chapter 11, verse 2, it also says something about Shinar. Maybe you could also look that up, Michael?
Yes. I was reading from another document that had that embedded. Do you want me to read the JST? Well, no, we'll go to the original. I'm just searching here. 1 second. Unless someone else has it, real quick.
I have not the exact verse, but what it states. So, I'm sorry. Verse no. It's chapter 11, verse 2, I think. But his says verse. But
I can read it.
Do you have it, Russell?
Yes, yeah. And it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there.
Okay. Yes, they dwelt there. So here is where it comes together, because here the Tower of Babel is built after the Great Flood. It says what I looked up. So here we are again. Oh yeah. Also the land Shinar is now present day Iraq. So that's also interesting. So we know a bit where it was. And also, what is also interesting, but it's maybe later, because it's probably in the area where now Baghdad is. Which is also really interesting, because after like 800 AD, it was a center of learning, Baghdad. So that's also interesting, because Nimrod was also pretty big on learning.
Question.
Yes, Brother Bob.
Yes, I have a couple of comments. This verse, of course, we read about how aggressive Nimrod was in attacking people or whatever, but there was opposition against him. I think we read earlier about Melchizedek, who talked about the fiery impast or something, that Melchizedek was able to quench the fire that Nimrod started in his village. And so there were, I could see why Nimrod had to prepare for war, because there was opposition to his exploits. And I found something I thought really interesting in my little Bible app. It came up about Nimrod. And I don't know where these people get their information, but I thought this comment was very, very, very interesting. It says, who was Nimrod? Not much is known about him, except that he was a mighty warrior and great hunter. But people with great gifts can become proud, and that is probably what happened to Nimrod. Some consider him the founder of the great godless Babylonian Empire. And so I thought, wow, there is information out there about Nimrod. I don't know any more about it than what I read, but I thought that was interesting that he is, and especially today, and you're talking about where Shinar is, that it at least it's related. So thank you.
Thank you, Brother Bob.
Can I comment something?
Yes, Aaron, please.
Shinar is also talked about in the Chronicles of the Children of Aranek in chapter 1 and chapter 2, and I think in Ryanek chapter 3.
Yeah. I remember that, because they give a different reason why the tower would be so high. Because here it says to walk into the heavens, and I believe in the Chronicles of Aranek it gives a different reason. Do you remember that?
It's a good question.
I don't remember now at the moment, but we will figure it out. But yes, interesting. You're right, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got
So
it
we
pulled
can.
up. It's mentioned 9 times in that record that Aaron talks about, the Chronicles of the Children of Aranek, which is the one that Matthew Gill translated over in the UK, in Great Britain. And it's kind of a history of their people. And apparently they knew Mahanri Mariancamer and his brother, Jared. Jared and his brother Mahanri, and they both prophesied against the people there. And let's see what it says. Now the Almighty shook the earth so much so that the tower that the people of Shinar were building began to fall down upon them and the earth round about them until they were humbled. But it is wisdom in the Almighty that he not only tore down their abomination and destroyed their city, that he did also confound their language, so that one brother could not understand another, or that a mother could not understand her child. There's other places we don't need to dwell on that, but it's just interesting. This the plains of Shinar. That's where it was. That's where it all happened.
It was widely known. Let's see.
Yeah.
It was yeah. Thank you so much for everybody's comments. Let me see. Dewey, verse 4. Could you read that, please? Or is the mic still off? You're only coming through in waves.
My internet is so unstable.
I'm sorry, Dewey. We cannot hear you, Dewey. Only in parts.
Yeah, why don't I melt that? I
could take the next verse instead.
Internet.
Yes. Okay. Sorry, Dewey. This is not working. Michael, you can go ahead and read. Thank you.
Okay. Yep, I'll do verse 4.
Yes.
And with the growth of the people around him, Nimrod proceeded to select chiefs who responded to him to the people. And they said one to another, "Let's make brick and cook it well with fire." And they said, "Let the people of Shinar come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose summit shall rise up very near the heaven, where we may establish a door for the promised descendant to enter the dwelling of God. And let us make a name for ourselves, that we may not be scattered throughout the face of the whole earth, but be remembered by generation after generation. Why the fated seed is with us, even Nimrod, the mighty among the children of men." So he knew about this prophecy of the chosen one that would be coming, and he wanted to make himself the chosen one. So he subjected all people underneath him and basically said, I am him.
Yes, and he was jealous because Moses 6 verse 11, he says Nimrod would be outside the presidency of the priesthood and even of possibility of the promised descendant coming from his seed. So he was a bit bitter, maybe.
Yeah.
Probably, so, among other things. Yeah. So, yes, maybe go on with verse 5, Michael?
Sure.
Because they were now convinced that Nimrod was the mighty one.
And they were building the tower so that he could go up
and
be at the top and communicate into the dwelling of God, it says.
Yep.
Okay, verse 5. With the propagation of the word that the promised descendant was in the world and was ruler in his own kingdom, many other people deliberately began to join him on the plain of Shinar. For how much it was necessary to erect more cities to accommodate the population all around the land of his government, some more distant than others by reason of the ore and other artifacts that added value to his reign. And thus Nimrod also began to call kings to govern these cities, but they were only vassals of his kingdom and subjects to his command.
What are your thoughts, Michael?
Well, I think as more and more people got word of this, they're like, oh, the promised descendant, he's here. He's got a kingdom. Well, let's go join him.
Yeah.
The people came in and so he had to kind of figure out, okay, we need to govern these people. So he appointed vassal kings to serve underneath him.
Yep. Good. John, could you read verse 6?
I'd be glad to. The men at that time knew very well that God had made a promise to his descendant, but no one knew how and when his descendant would come to reign among the sons of Adam. With this, Satan began to twist the meaning of the promise and apply it to Nimrod, who came to take advantage of the circumstance. Since from his youth, he sought in his heart to obtain the presidency of the priesthood of the only begotten Son of God. And now he found himself at the head of the priesthood presidency in the royal position of the promised descendant. That brings to mind, you know, another confirmation of the great deceiver. Satan is at work.
Yes, and also comes to mind Moses, who was also in Egypt, and he was also, yeah, it just popped into my head, he was also almost at the head of Egypt. It was interesting, like a lot of things that are happening are sometimes a little bit different with different players, but maybe, yeah, same things play out throughout history. At least I'm discovering more and more stories like that. But anyway, when you were reading, I was thinking about that also. But yeah, people are easily, and maybe they also did not have the scriptures to study at that time. We do have now, so we should know. We should have more discernment, don't you think, now?
Yeah, exactly. Not having this, having to, everything be an oral tradition and passed down would make it very difficult to overthrow the people who are not righteously leading you. So.
Well, and another thing to consider, because of recent history, if you watch these dictators take over, what do? They're going to burn the books first. They're going to cut the historical link off, and they're going to create their new propaganda-generated image of what they want the people to believe. That's an old card.
So maybe that's where it came from. Ancient priestcrafts.
Yes, among other things, because this was in Mesopotamia, so, and that had a history of being a really high civilization also. So there was, I'm sure there was more knowledge than we now know, probably, or we're starting to discover.
Sure.
Brother Bob, could you read verse 7?
In harmony with the selfish desire to create for themselves a great name, he elected himself as the promised descendant. And it was then that Nimrod chose a priestly caste to represent him as the Son of God. Dash. The priests in turn came to obtain from Satan, by means of powerful works and potents, little by little, began to create hierarchies and priestly garments, and by means of signs and handshakes, began to separate the high priests from those who were less important.
Also sounds familiar, I guess. What do you think, Bob?
What do I think? I'm thinking about all these scriptures. It's just so many things. I get caught up on a phrase, and while you guys are going on something, you know, I'm thinking, just pondering on these things. It's just not something to read quickly and to think you got it. It's like, it's amazing. I was just thinking about that dash. Sometimes I just, you know, I really wonder about the dashes And what could be in that dash in this verse that we're not prepared to receive? I'm hoping one day we can get some insight into those dashes. But nevertheless, this is his goal. He wanted to gain that recognition as the promised descendant. That's amazing.
I think maybe that's why there are dashes, because it might be clues to how to become like that or something, you know, or how his work methods were. And so you have to be very mature to handle that.
Yeah, or how to recognize a deception.
Oh, I was just thinking, in light of last night's class and the study we're doing on the eternal circle, I wondered if Nimrod is in those generations.
Oh, yeah.
Has he
I
had
haven't thought about that, but
more
yeah.
times? Has he perhaps repented? And I don't, I just wonder about this. Right now, he's in forever frozen as an evil person. But maybe I don't know how it would work. Maybe he had an opportunity to correct himself.
Makes you wonder who Putin is.
Or Hitler.
But see, I'm not sure. This Mahan, once you submit yourself to the Mahan order, I mean, maybe that's crossing the line. I don't know.
But you're not always aware of it, you know, like in the LDS Church. If I read this, the priestly garments and the signs and handshakes, to separate the high priest from those who were less important, you have to do, you're not getting into the temple, you know, everybody can go. No, that's not the way, you know. So in the LDS, at least, LDS Church. So do you know what I mean, Russell?
Sure, and I think that those may not be a demarcation exactly of the Nimrod type of order. There may also be in the good places as well. But I think you're right. You got to be careful when secret societies come forth.
Yeah, and remember chapter 14 of the sealed book. Like the fruits are not in an instant rotten or not good, but it's the water and soaks up, and it comes with good water and bad water, and so it's not always very clear where it exactly comes from. So, yeah.
Can I comment something?
Yes, please.
Those secret combinations we learned from Moroni is what destroyed the Jaredite nation. So they had access to him. Because remember that the daughter that danced before the king and to deceive him and stuff and put it into his heart to go and research this stuff so he would do the same. And then everything just became a whirlwind of conspiracy until it completely destroyed their nation. I just wanted to comment that. I love the Jaredite story.
Thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
Let me see. I will read verse 8. Soon the high priests of the order of Mahan began to form dogmas in relation to the promised descendant and to reverse the correct pronunciation of the name Nimrod for the pronouncing Marduk, which means the Lord. And I was thinking about that the other day because we have a Dutch Bible, and there has been many discussions about how to address, because Yahweh is out of the Bible, and usually it's now called the Lord, the Heer. So I'm like, is this a triumph for Marduk? You know, when throughout the whole Bible, actually, his name is like the Heer, the Lord. But, well, anyway, there are many names, of course, for God and Jesus. But, yeah, anyway. Just a thought.
I wonder how Nimrod is, how you can change the pronunciation of Nimrod into Marduk. That's an interesting comment there. You know, it's not obvious to my eyes how you can make that transformation, but maybe if you knew a little more about the original language, it would be a little more obvious.
Yeah, well, I see there's an M and an R and a D in Nimrod, and same in Marduk, M, R, and D. So maybe they, in that language, those were like the key letters, and so they were able to turn it around and come up with a different pronunciation.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, there's a lot of info about Marduk I read now. So it's interesting to have a look into that another time. But
all you do is take the remove the N and put a K at the end, and you get rid of the vowels. The vowels weren't used in the Bible, and probably not in this here. So yeah, it's not as difficult as I thought initially. So yeah, that's interesting.
Aaron, could you read verse 9?
Yes.
Thanks.
In these days, when Nimrod succeeded in promoting false self-worship as the promised descendant, he and his confederates began spreading the priestcraft through the land to keep the absolute control of the children of men, and being known this secret only the priestly caste in which he is the Lord of this great secret and high priest of the Mahan order. Therefore, Marduk. I just want to comment again. We learned from the Book of Ether and the Book of Mormon, this is exactly what destroyed that people.
Yep.
Yes, and it makes you think, okay, what has control over me or over people and Hollywood comes to mind and all the singers, and I see Taylor Swift and Madonna and I see them performing things on stage and I'm like, this is weird. And people are like in awe. Well, the audience is like in a total psychosis sometimes with concerts lasting for 3 hours. And sometimes afterwards people are, I forgot half of it, like they were like kind of hypnotized or something. So yeah, it's the knowledge I think is now everywhere. So yeah, the Holy Spirit is really important to have as a guide to make you turn away sometimes, because sometimes you don't want those images on your eyeballs. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Wow, yes. We call it the systems of Egypt and Babylon spiritually, because that's what these secret combinations are. They're just exactly like spiritual Babylon and spiritual Egypt. They just have the burden of control on our shoulders. I don't know if someone else could comment something better.
it's quite clear. Yeah. Let me see. Russell, could you read verse 10?
Okay,
there are the gifts again.
Yeah, I was thinking 10 and 11 together, but anyway.
Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
He knew that the gifts of the Spirit of God were pure and elevated feelings, and that they had been passed on from father to son since the days of Noah. He also knew that such feelings, united with the priesthood of the Son of God, who whose keys rested on Shem and his offspring and active in the descendants of Japheth, would soon obstruct the spread of his reign beyond the land of Shinar. With this, he proposed that a school of wisdom should be instituted in the cities he built, where children of all peoples of the earth would receive instruction at the highest level, improving their knowledge in the writing, in astronomy, astrology, mathematics, architecture, construction, music, and religion.
Maybe 12 also. So
yes. This would all be offered free to all people where children would enjoy the best accommodations and food Nimrod had to offer. With this was drawn up a decree that was taken by his messengers to the four corners of the earth where there was a family residing. This family should then be informed of the benevolence of Nimrod.
Yes, this was his tactic to prevent the obstruction of his reign. The obstruction of the spread of his reign. Yes. That's why he set up the schools. So to make more people like him, I think.
Well, to think that they're getting an inside story and they're getting elevated in their knowledge and understanding, that adds to their pride as well.
And the gifts right under, if we look at it more closely, he's given, you know, third dimensional gifts that everybody can measure, touch, feel, taste, you know.
Yes.
But the cost is, if you read on a little further, nullifying all the gifts of the spirit, which are above that.
And the Anthropocene schema is to methodology will counter or overthrow this Nimrod process. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's been like that ever since they started this. I mean, some of the first calls to go to Brazil were fleeing Babylon in all of its different definitions.
Yes, but we can look at it and learn from it, because I find it interesting that they would have the best accommodations and the best food. Like food nowadays, a lot of people, it's hard to eat healthy, because all of the adjectives in the foods, you know, and all the pans that you're baking in, they give up some strange stuff, you know, what makes you sick. So everything is almost organized to make you feel unwell. So if we are setting up the Anthropocene Ashtima method, then we should also look at, okay, but that was a good thing. You know, people lived in good accommodations and they had good food. These are two basic things, I think. But anyway.
Can I comment something?
Yes, sure, Aaron.
He basically used the vulnerability of human beings as a priestcraft. You know, houses, shelter, and, you know, the best accommodations. And to propagate his own mode of teaching to spread his false doctrine.
Yep. Yes.
I wonder
if people have it good, they're more willing to be submissive, I think.
Well, in terms of children, think about what he's really getting at there is he's at the hearts of the parents. All parents want their children to be well cared for. And the things they can most readily measure are going to be those things they see around them, the food and the housing and the education and
Yeah.
They'll be good and they'll be okay. Aren't we still doing that today? You send them to college, you get a master's, you do all these things to set them up for success.
Yeah.
So it's really playing on the parents there in rewarding children and making promises. Gifts right under.
Yep. Good point. Do we want to finish the chapter? Or do we want to, because it's almost time, I saw, or not?
We could probably finish the chapter. We got 10 minutes. Yeah.
Okay. Okie dokie. Michael, could you read verse 13?
Yeah. The purpose, though it seemed noble, was clothed with priestcraft through of illusion and obscurity. The master priests who were being prepared to teach the children brought by their fathers to this supposed school of wisdom had as their guideline the nullifying of the gifts of the Spirit of God in their hearts, making them believe in the opposite of everything they had been taught by their parents before entering what the high priesthood of Marduk called among the children of men as being the doors of wisdom. Doors of wisdom. So there was a deception at play here. He was, you know, they were making him think, come here, we'll feed you, clothe you, you'll be trained up, you'll be taught the best. But the plan was to nullify what their parents had taught them. I think we see that play out today. We send our kids off to university and the college professors with their woke ideology and their Marxist, you know, teachings. The kids come home and they turn against their parents. They're like, no, you can't be a conservative. You have to love socialism. You have to, you know, all these things. And so, I mean, it's just another, I guess it's just playing out in our day as well. This has been around for a long time. It just takes on a different name or a different cloak, I guess. It's cloaked in a different garb, but it's the same.
Yes. I think you're right. And also nowadays, because people are getting more confused, is my observation sometimes, they do not even teach their children. Because I know someone said, but they will be brought up in school, you know. So they think that the school will raise them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this whole Babylonian system that we find ourselves enslaved today, you know, with the easy creation of money from the central banks, the magic money system, as they call it, it goes way back. It makes it so that both parents have to be in the workforce just to make a living. And they send their kids off to government schools where they're indoctrinated, you know, to serve the state. And I mean, I could go on and on. We're just, none is so hopelessly enslaved than he that doesn't perceive his own slavery, right? We need to wake up to this and kind of break off the bands of our own slavery that we enjoy, as the children of Israel did, right? They longed for the flesh pots of Egypt and were mad that Moses took them out into the wilderness to die. And I wonder how often we do the same thing.
Yeah. Yes. It's all applicable to ourselves. Yes, true. Maybe Steve, could you read verse 14?
Be glad to. The instructions were clear. Everything in that children believe infallibly would be attributed to the power of evil. So if one were to see their father use the gift of the Spirit to heal someone in his family, or even to obtain miraculous help from the heavens, they would immediately rebuke their father and mother of such proceeding, claiming that they themselves were deceived in the beginning when their ancestors used magic and witchcraft to gain benefit from the spiritual world.
Thank you. Maybe finish it with, 16 also.
15, sir.
Sorry?
Can we read 15?
Yeah, read 15, please. Thank you.
This mode of teaching was widely accepted among the peoples of the earth, and in a short time, the power and influence of the gifts from the Spirit of God ceased to exist in their fullness in the feelings of men. And once again, their hearts were contaminated by precepts of men and poisoned by the spirit of Satan.
Yes. And Brother Bob, verse 16. I'm sorry, we're going pretty fast, I know.
Many of these children underwent the priestly initiation of the school of Marduk in order to perpetuate the subservience of the children of men to a man in the office of God. And when God spread the people to the four corners of the earth, it was these young priestly apprentices who later founded kingdoms with the same principle, where a man was venerated as the son of God or of the gods, because there was a mixture of doctrines between the people that were gathered together in the land of Shinar.
I would love to comment on that, because I just, the very first time I read the sealed book, I absolutely, I know the whole thing, I was just so enlightened and loved so much. But I always was so curious, before I found the sealed book, how the heck did all these ancient civilizations develop their all their interesting mythologies? I don't know if any of you have felt the same way growing up and just thought, well, could I study the Bible? Will I find it in there? Well, now we have it, and we think of like Japan and China in India and Egypt and Babylon, and here we go. It's these secret combinations, this priestcraft.
I'd like to read something in Helaman. I was just looking at it because I wondered, you know, how did these secret combinations take hold? If you remember Alma, he was told not to send forth. He had them on the, they were written down in their scriptures, but he was told specifically by the Lord not to send those out. But when we talk about the murders and the plundering and the secret handshakes, you know, and whosoever belonged to their band, they knew their brother. This is in Helaman chapter 6, verse 25 and 26. Now behold, it is these secret oaths and covenants which Alma commanded his son should not go forth unto the world, lest they should be a means of bringing down the people unto destruction. Now behold, those secret oaths and covenants did not come forth unto Gadianton from the records which were delivered unto Helaman. Nay, behold, they were put into the heart of Gadianton by that same being who did entice our first parents to partake of the forbidden fruit. Yea, the same being who did plot with Cain that if he would murder his brother Abel, it should not be known unto the world. And he did plot with Cain and his followers from that time forth. So the righteous were commanded not to, you know, put these oaths out there. Maybe they put a dab so that these secret combinations wouldn't get out there and get above the people. Satan could still reveal it to the hearts of those who really wanted it. Just like in the case of Gadianton, he put it into his heart, and almost as if he received a dark revelation from the dark one. He was able to bring those oaths. And as Aaron said, we see that that brought about the fall of the Nephite civilization in the end, the same as it had done with the Jaredites, and the same as it's done with all generations, with all civilizations that let these secret combinations get above them.
There's something interesting that I read. I read a book about the translation or the production of the King James Version of the Bible, and it talked about all the many versions of the Bible of those early reformers back in the late 1500s and early 1600s. So in 1611, when the King James Version was published, by a committee, by the way. They attribute the coming forth of the King James Version to having a great effect on the population, you know, from language to doctrines. And people would, when it first came out, people would learn to read so they could just read the Bible. And so they could read it for themselves. And the priests in the churches, the people knew the Bible better than the priests did. And so it was amazing that this information came forth. And one of the things that they attributed to the coming forth of the Bible was it ended the divine right of kings to rule. And so I can see what we just read here about men being venerated as the Son of God, you know, placed on the throne. You know, they would say that they were there by the will of God. Well, the King James Bible made it clear that, you know, God loved all people and did not single out a certain group of people to be favored. And so this lasted, persisted, this idea, you know, really began to take hold in the world. But in 1611, it began, its demise started, this idea of divine right of kings. So I thought that was interesting.
Michael?
Yes.
Was that in Helaman chapter 6?
Yeah, Helaman chapter 6 in the LDS version, verses, I guess it was 25, 26, and 27.
Can I read verse 28?
Yeah.
And also it is that same being who put it into the hearts of the people to build a tower sufficiently high that they might get to heaven. And it was that same being who led on the people who came from that tower into this land, who spread the works of darkness and abominations over all the face of the land until he dragged the people down to an entire destruction and to an everlasting hell. So I had to read that because it relates perfectly with what we're talking about.
Ties it all together. Yeah.
Perfect.
Well, thank you so much. Yes, I think we did chapter 7. That is great.
Yeah.
Chapter 8, there's so much more in there. Brother Bob is right. But if anyone ever has a, you know, a remark, something that we read, like the next lesson, we can always talk about that.
Sure.
Next week, chapter 8, and the Lord comes down to see what is happening.
Okay. We'll end the recording at this point.